This is audio reading from parts of the LIAC communications through Robert Shapiro, which happened in around 2001, according to this notes. A University of Mexico tenured medical professor who met with an extraterrestrial, posing as an ordinary civilian, helps corroborate claims of human extraterrestrials living among us. This professor was also a senior member of the Mexican Atomic Energy Commission. The professor used the pseudonym of Professor Hernandez and worked with a Mexican journalist, Sta Rodriguez, to release details of his contact in the early 1970s. It all began in 1972, with a voice in his head, leading him to scientific breakthroughs in his own medical research in immunology, which brought him special recognition by his peers. Professor Hernandez knew the ideas were not his own, because he had no background in developing them. They came to his mind full-blown, as though someone who knew perfectly well what he was talking about had explained them to him in detail. Later in that year he was approached by the author of that voice in his head, and it turned out to be a beautiful extraterrestrial woman who said he could call her Elence, which he changed to Laia for short. She met him several times on the university campus before she went any further. Laia wore a dark pantsuit of some very fine material that the professor could not quite identify. She had dark eyes and wore dark hair shoulder length. She walked our streets and breathed our ambient air with no difficulty. She even drank fruit juice with him at a sidewalk lunch table as they talked. She was obviously far better educated than Hernandez, and he was considered one of his country's foremost scientists. When the professor questions Laia's extreme intelligence and the source of her superior knowledge, she took him into her confidence and told him that she was not from this planet, that she came from another world in a group of stars we called Andromeda. He thought she meant the Andromeda galaxy at first. On a subsequent meeting, she guided him to a secluded desert area outside of Mexico City and took him aboard her disc-shaped spacecraft. There, she showed him many scientific wonders, and at one point took him to a viewing screen where she worked some controls and brought up an image of a star field in the screen. She showed him some guide stars in Cassiopeia and in Andromeda constellation, and then showed him where her home sun was in relation to those other stars. Laia told Mr. Hernandez that there were many space races far more advanced than men of Earth who were also coming here for exploration, observation, and study of our humanity, about to enter a point where we would either join others in space travel and exploration, or we would eliminate ourselves in a suicidal employment of our primitive technology. We had become a society of some interest to many. Laia picked the professor up and took him on trips on her spacecraft on four occasions. One of them was a small 5-meter diameter explorer. Another was a 60-meter intermediate ship that carried a number of the smaller ones. And one time he was taken to a much larger mothership that was a mobile support base for several of the intermediate class. She said that they had many teams working in our solar system and here, and they had many Earth contactees. She told the professor of another contactee being used by a different contact team from her society who lived in Chicago. His name was Thomas Haskins, and he was a black man who lived in the South Side. Professor Hernandez ultimately met Haskins and they compared notes. Laia also told the professor of other space-traveling races carrying out operations on this planet, including, remarkably, some contacts by Pleiades with a one-armed man who lives in Switzerland. This was mentioned to the professor in 1976. Before anything on the Pleiades contacts in Switzerland had been released outside of a very small local group of people around that man. Hernandez's story was investigated by Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens, who corresponded with Sta Rodriguez. Stevens found many similarities with other contactee cases, even though Hernandez could not have known of these. He decided to translate Rodriguez's book of Hernandez's experiences and eventually concluded that Hernandez was credible. As in the Adamski and Menger cases, Hernandez reveals that his extraterrestrial contact could easily blend into the Mexican population. In contrast to the Adamski and Menger cases, Laia was alone and did not appear to have a buddy. While she did not own a car, she knew how to navigate Mexico City's road system to ensure that Hernandez could reach the destination of her flying vehicle. Her ability to meet with Hernandez in city locations and knowledge of how to travel to rural areas, again suggests familiarity with the location and customs of the native population. It is not only contactees that have discussed extraterrestrials living among us, there are also the testimonies of highly credible whistleblowers who make similar claims. In 1984, with his contact still going on, Professor Hernandez could no longer be reached by Sir Rodriguez, or other researchers who had made contact with him as a contactee, and nothing of him has been discovered of him since, though both private and police detectives have continually searched. A full 224-page report on these contacts has been published as UFO Contact from Andromeda, by Rodriguez Stevens. Here we jump straight into a communication regarding their ships. Lai is saying, quote, "There is nothing whatsoever felt inside the vehicle. That's why you have that effect, where you can see the arrow moving toward the vehicle's hull, but it bounces back. It bounces back, so you don't feel it inside the vehicle. If you felt it inside the vehicle, it would be so uncomfortable that people couldn't tolerate it. Along the outer edges, it slightly penetrates the outer hull of the vehicle, but that's desirable. That way the field effect itself, which has life qualities to it, knows what it is protecting. It has to be an intimate contact. It can't be kept away from the hull. The hull has to be involved. That's why the hull, actually, of this plane and the plane itself, the metal that is used, would have to be the same kind of metal, but that can be done in your current technology, if you understand what I'm saying. It all has to be the same kind of metal, it can't be this metal for this and that metal for that. But that is not a problem as long as the wheels are not extended. So, you see, that's why you would engage the system when the vehicle is in the air. Once you extend the wheels, it probably would disrupt the system, the field. Once you had the motive force, you would be able to essentially take this plane and go anywhere. You could fly to the moon and set up colonies there, you could go to Mars and establish colonies there. You could do many of the things that are dreams for you now. So that was the reason for this contact and why we chose a man with this level of education, and also the backup man, who had not that level of education but a more versatile training, and the artist, who is a woman and had the capability and capacity to envision, see, draw, paint, show. To demonstrate these things in some way without actually explaining the technology, since that's not necessary in art, at least the type of art she does. So although it wasn't a success with the professor in the way we wanted, the high school teacher has begun to write about things, granted, in his time away from school, but I think that the information will come cut soon. If not in the form of an essay, I think he's put out a few of those already. It will come out in the form of a novel, wherein you can say anything and perhaps be more forthcoming with your visions. So you plan to give the professor that technology? We plan to give him not only the technology, but the means for him to utilize it personally for a commercial venture. He would have, of course, become fantastically wealthy, but we didn't see a problem with that, since other ET cultures had attempted to give this technology to various cultures and societies on Earth in many previous contacts. This was our first attempt. I think the Zeta Reticulans were one of the ones who tried to give this to the people of Earth, but it never really went past the governmental contactees they met, so they basically gave up. Also, they had some unpleasant experiences, and they said, well, you know, they'd rather do something else. So we chose this route. I grant that you could say it was interfering with your society, but this man always wanted that kind of experience, not thinking that it could ever happen, so we felt we had permission. Also, we checked along his soul lines with our teachers, we don't have that capacity ourselves, and they advised us that it would be acceptable to approach this man and the other two potentially. Since this was the project, the idea of your people being able to travel this way. It was a project that was behind schedule. It would have been good if you could have begun your travel in the 1980s, by your business calendar, but it might still be good in the future. So that was the purpose of the contact, to provide this technology, including a mechanism by which the vehicle would fly. The mechanism is based on navigation principles. Coordinates would be given. You would essentially set your coordinates on a specific place, and you would focus a beam that utilizes sound as its primary concentrated energy, not light, but sound, because sound can travel through things. When you have a beam of concentrated light, there are going to be things between you and that objective. Say, a planet. Also, some things are constantly moving. If you have a light beam, it could easily be deflected or might even harm that which moves between your light beam and your objective. But if you have a sound beam, things can pass through it. As you know, sound can pass through structures and it doesn't have to harm overtly. Granted, you have some work to do on the planet to modulate your sound broadcast so it doesn't cause any harm. So we would have showed you how to create a concentrated sound beam, for which I think you already have most of the technology, and focus it on your objective. By doing that, you engage with the gravitational pull of your objective, and the vehicle which you are in takes a path just like a string. Picture a string, it takes the most direct course. It won't always be a straight line, but it would take the most direct course and the safest, of course, because there might be things in the way, suns or something. You would take the most direct course to that objective, traveling on the sound beam, which is safe. So I'm giving some of this information now, and the reason I'm putting it in the terminology I'm using is that the people who are working on these things need some of these hints. I'm not going to spell it out, as you say, but I think that the advantage here is to put this out in this commercial way, so here we jump some forward. Into headline. We placed the knowledge in the professor's unconscious. So that was the purpose of the contact with the professor in Mexico, but it just didn't work out that way. Fortunately, the backup people are producing, and this document that we are helping to provide will support that. Now, I am not totally clear, but it is possible that the man's notes have survived, yet the notes do not always contain the scientific information. The scientific information of how to do these things was originally transferred to him in the way he felt comfortable with. Originally, the science people started talking to him, "We'd like to give you this, we'd like to give you that," but it was in such technical terms while he was being dazzled by the romance of the experience. By romance I do not mean sexual, but rather the romance in the old time sense of it. His perceptions of the entire experience. A dream fulfilled, I never thought I'd meet them, isn't it wonderful? Romance like that. Because that was going on, he really couldn't take in the scientific aspect of it all the time, even though it was part of his Earth life. So we offered to place the knowledge into his unconscious, give it a route from his unconscious to his conscious mind and give him something he could do to bring it up. But in order to do that, for one thing, it would require some time to go by after the contact, meaning that 3, 4, maybe 5 years after the contact, he would then begin to initially dream. In short, it would appear to him as if he was thinking this on his own. This is a gentle form of instigated inspiration that allows an individual to participate fully in the creation of that which is being done and even put his or her own individual stamp on it. But I think that this technique was compromised somewhat by the professor's personal experience, meaning that it is something that requires a certain amount of gentleness in a person's life, specifically meaning that the person has to be able to feel free to move forward and things that happen otherwise to maybe control or provide certain therapies would interfere. Of course, once he was placed in that mental institution, there was really not much chance of anyone taking him seriously anyway. You know, it's a strange thing in your institutions like that. They're not filled with people who have these ideas, but in terms of people who were institutionalized, say, even 30 years ago, to say nothing of 40 years ago, there are at any given moment always 3 or 4% of those people, not always the same people all the time, who can not only tap into these types of knowledge or wisdom from other cultures, other planets, but also make drawings and even specific demonstrations, were they given the means to do so. So it's an ongoing thing. Part of the reason is that these people are sometimes so open. Sometimes being open in some societies and cultures can create problems for people. We as extraterrestrial cultures do not create that openness in people, but the openness that they have on their own creates the potential for beings like us to visit them. Evidently, the professor became much, much more open and his mind expanded during the course of the contacts. Yes, as one might expect, because you have to understand, given the professor's field, before the contacts he was constantly dealing with limits, meaning this far and no farther, in short, the laws of physics, which aren't really laws so much as they are potentials. It would be much better to call them potentials, and actually, potential is a term used in physics, but calling them laws creates artificial barriers. Still, he was bumping up against those. But when you have someone take those so-called laws and remove those barriers and say, well, it's true that you can't go forward on this time to expand that, but if you start going forward in other directions, and then go forward in other directions from there. In short, such things are definitely consciousness expanding. Next headline. Rebuilding Earth's atmospheres. A lot of the information that is a new UFO contact from Andromeda has to do with potential disasters for Earth. Would you like to discuss them more fully and then possibly give us an update since the original discussions with the professor were in the 1970s? Rebuilding Earth's atmospheric layers, working with her and connecting with her magnetic pole that goes from the top to the bottom of the planet, which is a way of getting in touch with her, the heart of her being. See, if you can do that as a trained person. Do you understand what I am saying? A trained person. There are people who know how to work with the planet. And when you do that, it is good to work with the storms, but it is also good to help the planet to recreate or regenerate the portions of the planet's atmosphere that have been permanently damaged. Is it what we call the ozone layer that has holes in it? It is, yes. And that layer, as you call it, plus other layers that are being damaged that potentially might allow leakage in some way of gases or radiations, which then would be catastrophic to your cultures on the surface of the planet, then you would have to take steps. But there are a couple of things you can do now. Encourage those individuals who have direct compatibility and influence with your planet to help work on rebuilding the atmospheres, because they are different, not just one thing. The atmospheres around Earth, and also to help rebuild and sustain the portions of Earth that have been removed and processed and used in other ways by commercial enterprises, oil, gas, coal, copper, etc. Were our atomic explosions and hydrogen explosions the initial cause of those holes in the ozone? I think it was an agitating factor, but that wasn't the original cause. The original cause was largely pollutants. An accumulation of pollutants. You get some and they stay there, then there are more. And you see, it doesn't break down, it just becomes more and more and more and more, and eventually it breaks down the atmosphere. It doesn't dissipate. Mother Earth's typical way of dissipating any kind of pollutant, whether it be an energy or a physical substance, is to disperse it or rain on it or run lightning through it or something like that, the elements. But there are some things, some pollutants, in short, portions of her body, that were never intended to be in her atmosphere, granted, changed by commercial, enterprise, or even governmental application of commercial enterprise that create problems no matter how much dispersal or rain or anything like that. Obviously, you could put some part of your body into another part that doesn't belong there, and it would create problems, you understand that. It's exactly the same for the planet. The professor asked how this situation could be resolved. Leah said that they possess a delicate system of recollecting the space waste, and it's a work that must be carried out continuously. We don't have any technology yet that's even close to. No, I don't think that's realistic for you to do. I think that the only hope and probably the best hope, is to encourage individuals who can work with Earth directly and who are compatible with Earth, to begin working with the inner portions of the supposed pole that goes through Earth in order to get in touch with the core of her personality and attempt to simply regenerate, meaning call in assistance from various mystical things. I think you refer to it in some other words, but it amounts to that. We consider that a form of science, doing that, because it is science. Science is a practical application of methods and manners. We mean something different than manners, but I'll say methods, that achieves a harmonious result. You see, in your science now, harmonious is not always included as a definition. But when you include harmonious, then you have to work with the permission of all beings and all portions of beings. And the good thing about that, aside from being polite and that everyone wants to have that harmony applied to them as well as to others, is that those kinds of solutions tend to be permanent, or at least much longer lasting than this type of vacuuming operation that she was talking about. It's granted that we have that capacity, but we have found that when individuals can work with any planet on a compatible basis and help the planet to regenerate, it is vastly more valuable. They can accomplish a lot more a lot faster than a vacuuming operation. I'm using vacuuming since it's a term you understand, even though it's not exactly vacuuming. It's a little different, but you don't have to have that technology. If you had it, it would take too long. You don't have time for that. Next headline. The antimatter device in the Bermuda Triangle. The most dramatic issue discussed is the antimatter weapon buried in the Bermuda Triangle, which Leia said is still functional, that was attracting negative ETs. Now, at that time, there were negative ETs here. I don't think any are here now at this time. I will simply say that that has been resolved, and any residual energy is associated with. I wouldn't want to call it a weapon. The device was not originally built for the purpose of being a weapon, it was simply applied to being a defensive mechanism. See, there's a difference between a shield and a gun. I'd think of it more as a shield. There's some misunderstanding about that, because there has been so much of what I would call popular culture around the idea of the so-called Bermuda Triangle that has become infused with the actual events. So I'd say that some of the material in the book about that is not completely accurate. When the Andromedans refer to the book, they are referring to the English version of the story of the Professor and the Andromedans, UFO Contact from Andromeda, published by Wendell Stevens and reprinted in this volume. However, to the extent that there was a problem, it has been resolved. But is it true that it was drawing the Xpotas and the negative Syrians who wanted to use it? No, it was not directly that. You could say, oh, perhaps, but I'd say that wasn't the real problem. The real problem was that beings who were intended to go to the then dimensional level of 2.5 or so, eventually to take over third dimensional Earth, were coming into your time, and your place. They needed to be elsewhere. Their energy would have been felt by you as being negative, but they needed to resolve their situation. This has to do with those beings from the negative planet in Sirius. So you've done this at length. The problem was that the device created an attraction and altered their course so that the proper course for them was skewed for a time, so they wound up being all over Earth in your time, in your place, and they very painstakingly had to be removed. And sometimes human beings in your time had what were like tubes connected to them, because these beings would travel in something like a tube, and while there are tubes to do many things, these tubes would feed into people, these beings, and create chaos for all concerned. This has been corrected. Yes, they are on a lower dimension of Earth now. Yes, and it took a significant amount of time and lots of people involved to create a clearing there. But they have been cleared from your people now. It created a certain amount of popular culture around that as well, people saying this and that because of phenomena that was generated. But I think we can gloss over this, it's been resolved. Picture text. The picture of Leia taken by the Professor. Can you confirm that this is a picture of Leia? It looks like she has that energy shield around her or something. I will not confirm that, that's all I'll say. I am not ruling out that it is something, but I will not confirm that. Think of it this way, if a human male found an extraterrestrial dazzling, what do you think that extraterrestrial might look like? She might look like a dazzling female. This appears to be some sort of an energy shield. But that's not true. I didn't say that, I said that I'm not going to confirm that. And I will say this without any explanation, it would have been better if that picture had not been published. But I won't say why. At Cheswa's request, we have removed the supposed photo of Leah, published in the original UFO Contact from Andromeda book. As your friend Zoosh said, there will be gaps in the book. This will be one, at least for now, though other members of the crew might wish to speak. Next headline. Locating Leah's home planet. Leah calls Andromeda a galaxy, but you are really from the Andromeda constellation in our galaxy. Is that correct? You understand that wherever you're from, you're going to refer to your place in your own terms. Yes, we've had many space people talk about solar systems as galaxies. The term is very ambiguous. But you have to understand that it depends on how you look at things. Something might be clearly a solar system to you, but from a distance you might say, oh well, there is the Moon and Mars and Venus, or something. But if you live in places like that, these planets all have other aspects that are living and real, just like the planet you're on has other aspects. So you see, like, 33 dimensions of each planet? That's right. So we would describe a place that included the full galaxy of its being. But it is true that there is another galaxy entirely that we refer to as Andromeda. Just because you have bodies in the sky that you call something that is part of your own vast galaxy. It is a word thing. Okay, but you're really from what we call the Milky Way galaxy, the constellation in our galaxy, not from another galaxy. I've given you all I can on this. Does it make a difference? Think of it this way, if we were closer or farther away, would it make a difference? Well, I don't see why it makes a difference or why you won't say it, but whatever you want to say is what you're going to say. I'm just trying to clear up something that was ambiguous in the original book. No, don't take it as a criticism. Answer the question. Please. Because you are a representative of your planet, I'd like to know. If you choose not to tell us, that's fine. I personally don't see why you can't tell us, but that's not the answer I requested, or I wouldn't have asked you to answer the question. Think about it. As a person of Earth, would you personally find the idea that the place you call Andromeda or another place farther away that we call Andromeda, which one would you find more personally attractive? Well, it could be either one, the close one, because we might be able to visit it, and the farthest one away, because it has more mystery, it's farther away. Exactly. Thank you, that's the answer. I will say, however, that we are from the Andromeda galaxy, and I will allow you to draw your own conclusions. Next headline. Andromedan life spans and appearance. Let's talk a little bit about you. Leah said she was 900 years old. In our terms, so we can understand, because you probably don't use years, how old are you? About 1800. Your lifespan is about how much? Did you get that outfit? We don't look human, but we don't look so very strange. We look humanoid. Granted, we are a little taller. 6.5 feet? 7? Some are shorter, some are taller, but in terms of adults, we are usually taller than you. And so, maybe from 6.5 feet tall to not much more than 8 feet tall. When you talk about a soul level, that assumes that the beings you contacted, the professor and others, had been Andromedans in some life or had some connection. No. We didn't check with their souls directly, we checked with our teachers, who told us. Our spiritual teachers told us that it was okay to proceed with this. They didn't tell us that these people had been Andromedans, that's not necessary, you know. Everybody is connected in some way. So you don't have to have had a personal experience with either the place you refer to as Andromeda in your so-called galaxy. You know, in our parlance, by the way, what you call your galaxy, meaning the Milky Way, we would refer to that as a universe. So that's why the terminology doesn't directly correlate. Well, we use the term universe for everything our particular creator created.